Let's do this part of the show for a little FYI. We call that for your information. EVs cost 40% less to maintain than conventional cars. Energy Department report says, it just came out, I guess it came out today or yesterday for this week. Maintenance costs for a light-duty battery-powered car are around 40% less per mile than for a gas-powered car. According to a recent report from the United States Department of Energy's Argonne National Laboratory. The Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy highlighted the findings, which explains that electric vehicles lack timing belts, oxygen sensors, fuel filters. They don't even know any spark plugs. They have no use for a multi-speed transmission and other parts that can prove costly to service in what we call our conventional cars. And whereas gas-powered cars require regular oil changes, EVs have no need for motor oil at all. The study found that while gasoline-powered cars cost around 10 cents per mile on average to maintain, electric cars cost only about 6 cents per mile. Hybrid costs about nine cents, a little bit more than the electric, but a little less than what we call our conventional cars to maintain. When you back up and look at it, folks, these findings add to a growing body of work showing that, factoring in savings on maintenance and fuel, EVs are almost always equal to now and sometimes cheaper to own than conventional cars, despite having higher upfront costs when you initially purchase them. The difference in maintenance costs between gasoline-powered cars and electric cars could prove significant to companies or government agencies that own large fleets of vehicles. Using the findings from the report and data from the General Services Administration, Motor Trend determined the cost of maintaining the federal government's fleet of light-duty vehicles if it were entirely gas-powered and if it were entirely battery-powered. It found that an all-electric fleet would save about $78 million per year to maintain than an all-gas-powered fleet. The Credit Administration has said that it plans to replace about 400,000 vehicles owned by the federal government with EVs. Although the timeline is not yet clear just because of the total volume that they would need, the demand for EVs in many cases already exceeds the supply. The other possibility would be the U.S. Postal Service, which accounts for the bulk of the government vehicles. They recently started a contract with an Ohio-based company, which we know, Oshkosh, to deliver about 165,000 mail trucks, but now they're reconsidering that order and may replace it with an equal number of EVs. That remains to be seen again because of the supply side of EVs that are available. Let me throw in a few factoids that kind of gives you a little better look at this picture. Despite more than 100 years of refinements, the internal combustion engine used in cars just isn't that good at converting fuel into movement. Even in the most efficient gasoline engines, only around 15 to up to 28, 30% of the energy in the fuel ever makes it to the wheels or other useful functions. The rest is just wasted in as noise and heat. Current electric motors, by contrast, are more like 77% efficient. They get more than twice as many miles out of the same amount of energy. This efficiency gap is so big that even in Poland, where most electricity comes from coal-fired power stations, electric cars still emit about 25% less carbon than their fossil-fueled equivalents. Now consider the fact that we are moving towards greener energy, whether it's solar power or it's wind power, tidal power, whatever. Those are totally green inputs, and that will do nothing but bring the actual efficiency of electric cars continually up as long as we continue growing into what will eventually have to be sustainable, renewable energy sources over the next decade or two. As part of this, take into consideration the impacts of our health are profound, including respiratory problems, heart disease, shortened life expectancy. The head of the World Health Organization actually calls current air pollution the new tobacco, although they note that you can move away from cigarette smoke. In contrast, when your home or your workplace or even your school is surrounded by air pollution all the way around, there's no escape. And finally, in my estimation, as a society, folks, we already have the technology. We know how to tackle our air pollution crisis. What we now need to do is to promote, first of all, walking and cycling. I know that's silly. I happen to be a cycler. I'm an older man. I happen to have a bicycle that can be used electrically if I need it. Most of the time, I do it under leg power. But if I get on too much of a hill or I go too far, all I do is touch the little electric button and it just kind of aids me till I get back on the flat ground. But that will improve our public transportation infrastructure so that we have better alternatives to just driving everywhere. Incidentally, the health benefits are greater than you think. A bike doesn't really work you out a lot, but if you do it every day, 10 miles or whatever you do do your normal daily activities, such as grocery shopping or whatever else you have to do, over time, it is a tremendous difference to just jumping in a car and going down the road. Helping people switch to electric vehicles will mean we will no longer be reliant on cars that use gasoline and diesel, both of which are polluting. Some of this is already happening. Numbers of EVs are increasing as prices come down and charging points are installed, and we're going to put a bunch of them in the United States in the next 4 years. While some car makers have made promising commitments, for instance, EVs will form 25% of both Volkswagen and Daimler Chrysler's ranges just a few years down the road by 2025. Now, I didn't even know this. All new Volvo models from 2019 on, the new ones, will all be all electric. And just sort of put an end on this, I won't drag this out for the rest of my entire show. Of course, in the long run, EVs will only be as good as the electricity they use. The next step is to get rid of all fossil fuels as quickly as we can. It's going to take time, folks. I think none of us that really want to go green think it's going to be done overnight. It took a long time to get where we are. It's going to take a while to get back where we need to be. Switching to new renewable energy sources and slashing carbon emissions as much as we can in the next decade is about as important a thing as I know that we can all talk about that is certainly obtainable. Because I've been doing this kind of show for over 20 years, I very often come across people that want to discuss, for instance, climate change with me, but they come with facts that are not facts. They listen to the John Stossels of the world that, I don't know why, fabricate things that if you go to the science level are absolutely untrue. I'm not sure where the saying came from, but the saying I heard when I was young, actually I heard it from a guy named Oral Roberts, which the Oral Roberts University still exists. I wasn't much of a follower of his. But each show my mom used to watch started and ended more or less with, if everyone lit just one little candle, what a bright world we would have. Well, I have another one that I like. What if everyone replaced just one conventional light bulb with one LED light bulb, what a cooler atmosphere we'd eventually have. And people kind of get a little, well, me replacing a light bulb doesn't do any good. If one person on Earth lit one candle, it wouldn't do any good. But if we all lit 7.8 billion of us a candle, it would be a pretty bright world. Well, if all of us would go out in each week or each month or whatever, when you go to the store, buy one LED. One light bulb, get rid of the tungsten, even get rid now of the fluorescence. That was a step in the right direction, but they have some environmental problems of their own. You would be amazed, first, at the electricity you save. So it saves money over time in your pocket. Pretty good chunk of change, actually, if you do your whole house. But you're also doing your little bit. Every little bit counts of what it takes to get us back on a track to where this world was basically unchanged as far as atmospheric differences for about 11,000 years. And it happened to be that same era, right when humans, as we know them, came to be what we are. For that period, the parts of carbon that we now know, and we know how to be accurate with that, folks, that's why we believe in our scientists, stayed at about 280 parts per million. Then, starting the Industrial Revolution about 100 or 125 years ago, it started rising. We started, first of all, we becoming more and more aware of it because of some of the indications that were obvious. We are over 400 parts per million. Once we became aware of the rising of the CO2 and other trace gases, but CO2 is easier to track. We're very accurate with it. We started watching the change, and it went from 280 to 350. 350 we thought was the magic point. If we could stay at that or below, we could pretty much handle what we now see. They thought these tremendous storms and outrageous hurricanes and things were going to be coming in the 2050s. This stuff's here earlier even than the scientists predicted it would be, which is a little bit scary if you ask me. Then some of these same folks I run into, well, why are you so concerned? I'm concerned for the next generation, folks, and that's how we have to look at it. We've done what we're going to do. Now it's time to start fixing some of it for my children, which now have children, of which their children, if I'm a lucky man, will maybe even have another generation before I'm no longer here. So my sort of dedication to that cause is the fact that we should be leaving our future generations a better world than we were left. And at this point, we're not doing it, folks. The population problem, can't get into that. I don't have time right here on this show. But we're going to be at 8 billion people before you know it. And that is a lot of people to have to feed. Maybe I should mention here something a lot of people are unaware of. You should go to Worldometers. It's a strange, free website. But as I'm sitting here finishing this one little piece of show, I looked at the latest births and deaths worldwide since the first of the year. This year, what is that, 6 months ago? 6.5 months ago? The world population has increased by 38,843,000, let's just say 39 million humans. That's 10% of our entire United States, more than 10% of it. In 6 months, folks. Now, we as a country are actually leveling out, except for the fact that we still have immigrants coming in. We actually are at a negative population flow within our country. Population numbers tremendously, as are most of the third world. All those folks still are going to have to be fed. So running out of time for this week, but just food for thought, folks. We're the generation that really going to probably have to take care of this. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matter.